You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Courtney Coulson. This is Minute 3. We're still going through the credits and the aerial shots of the mountains. We are never certain if this is Earth or not. I believe Ridley intended it to be, and it's implied in the script. It makes sense, especially when we cut straight to Elizabeth and Charlie in the cave in the next scene. That's something a lot of people overlook, is how editing informs a story. Juxtaposition can be accidental, but rarely will an editor just slap two scenes together back to back. Scenes should be placed in such a way that informs a story. Editing informs pacing and the reveal of information. This planet looks similar to LV-223, the planet the Prometheus later lands on, so I'm wondering if they chose to use this location to create a sense of ambiguity, or they're simply forced to use it again because they couldn't use Morocco. On screen are the credits for producers David Giller and Walter Hill. Yes, that is where our favourite synth boys get their names. It does bother me somewhat that, you know, we had a system going. We had A for Ash, B for Bishop, C for Call, D for David, and then W for Walter. You ruined the system. That said, Walter is my favourite character in the Alien universe, so I can't complain. As I record this next to my desk, I have a little pop vinyl of Walter. It was a gift. He's sitting next to my laptop. We see the engineer ship setting down. This is not the typical horseshoe shape, but more of a saucer. It only occurred to me recently that this ship is a different design, and how in most sci-fi shows, the aliens only seem to have one kind of vehicle. Similarly, there tends to be only one faction or race or nationality of aliens. You know, they're all Vulcans, they're all Romulans, they're all Klingons, so on and so forth. However, there is some fan speculation over whether there are different factions of engineers, ones who create and others who destroy, which I think is quite an interesting concept. I notice most DVD audio commentaries are often unsatisfying because they don't go into enough depth. It's just a director or actor reacting in real time to what they're seeing on screen and remembering relevant anecdotes. Arnold Schwarzenegger is the best. If you look up some of his commentaries, they're quite fun. It's just like,
ah yes, it's me as Conan, and I'm on the beach with a sword, and here I am swinging the sword. Yeah, it was pretty fun.
I can't promise that's the only impression I'll be doing on this show. Ridley Scott especially wings it. He doesn't get too in-depth in his commentaries, especially for Prometheus and Covenant. The Covenant one is quite funny, actually. Ridley is just, yeah, again, mostly describing everything as it happens, but as if we're all idiots and couldn't figure it out for ourselves. Like, yeah, you see, we've got, I can't do a Ridley Scott impression, I'm sorry. It's a very strange accent, but, you know, he's like, well, you see that we've got two androids, and they look the same, you know, they're both Michael Fassbender. So maybe you're thinking, maybe they're related or something. It's like, you know shit, Ridley! I fucking surmised that! Thanks! The Alien one, the original 1979 one, it isn't bad though, but the best might be the screenwriter's commentary for Prometheus. It features both John Spates and Damon Lindelof, so it's about as detailed as you could hope for, and as I mentioned in the previous episode, I think screenwriters, well, at least for my money, they're going to give you the most insight to the mechanics of the story as you could hope for. I thought it might be interesting to compare the early script, Alien Engineers, by John Spates, throughout this series. I find it interesting to see how a movie evolves over the production. They say the story is written three times, once in the script, twice in production, and a third time in editing. Here we have the first scene from Alien Engineers. Fade in. Exterior. Earth. Day. 12,000 BC. The world turns below us, vast and slow. A rumble. A shadow sweeps over the land. We move with the shadow. We cast the shadow. Landscapes slide by, reduced by altitude to abstractions. River deltas, forests, and floodplains. A raw natural world. No trace of civilization. The shadow glides over mountains and glaciers, across an ocean and a pale beach. Over lowland plains, at the foot of a volcanic mountain, it stops. Exterior, lowland, plain. Day. Three figures walk out of the shadow. They are men, and yet not men. Their skin is snow white, their features heavy and classical, as if Rodin's thinker had risen from his seat. Their smooth heads are earless and hairless, their glittering eyes are entirely black. Against the stark land, their height is impossible to judge. They are engineers. Two of them are cloaked in dark robes of strange design. The third is naked. One of the cloaked engineers opens a featureless black box. Inside lies a cake of dark, sticky material. The naked one lifts the dark cake with ceremonial slowness. It hums and buzzes, foams with iridescent spheres. He raises a seething cake to his mouth like the sacrament. Black scarabs boil out of the dark material, swarm over his lips, glittering insects that chitter and bite. Under the swarm, his lips melt away, a horrific vision of teeth, black blood, dissolving bone. They are devouring him. It's not uncommon to hear amongst the alien fanbase that the alien engineer's script is far superior to the final version of Prometheus, but I argue that this may be more of a case of wanting what you can't have. Both versions have their merits, but both have their flaws. If these scripts were to be combined, I believe a near-perfect version of this story could be told. I believe the engineer script gets points for more logical cohesion, more scientific truth, it's more interested in that. But there are certain things, like how it deals with David as a character, that are really not good at all. He becomes quite a cliche villain, his intentions are quite telegraphed. This scene is almost exactly how it is in the film, but setting it in 12,000 BC, that means it is the Paleolithic Age. This is definitely Earth, and this is definitely the Paleolithic Age, which means it would be a few thousand years before human beings would develop agriculture. And in a later scene, no spoilers, but not to get ahead of myself, that we do see a human woman. She would be anatomically modern, virtually indistinguishable from us. The implication, I suppose, is much like 2001 A Space Odyssey, that we are dumb monkeys who didn't earn any of our accomplishments by ourselves, we instead needed aliens to help us. I always take issue with plots like that. I think it's rather dismissive of how incredible humans are. Even all the way back in 12,000 BC, our ancestors were much more capable than we give them credit for. They were resourceful, adaptable, tool-using creatures. They were apex predators already changing their environment to suit them. So I like that in the film, it's ambiguous. We don't really know what planet it is. If you want it to be Earth, you can do that. There's plenty of evidence for that. If you want it to be LV-223 or some other planet, so be it. There's, again, enough ambiguity there for you to interpret it any which way you like, and that's why I love this movie. I suppose if they had come to Earth after humans had already been evolving here, that does make their name make more sense. They are literally engineering, redirecting the flow of evolution. And that does tie into a lot of ancient alien theories, you know, that the pyramids were built by aliens and so forth, or Stonehenge, but again, humans are so incredible, especially when you think about how little they had centuries ago. You know, they had no machines, there was no industrialization, but they were able to build pyramids and Stonehenge. That's so incredible to me. Now, I've always been more fascinated by the space jockey, or engineers, than the xenomorph. Although, you know, of course I love the xenomorph, that's why I'm here. In fact, as I record this podcast, above me is some concept art Giga did of the derelict ship. To me, I felt there was so much mystery and wonder and awe in that scene where the crew of the Nostromo are wandering around that set. It's just brilliant. It takes a fairly generic plot, you know, a monster hunting down a crew of people. It's nothing special, but adding these little details, like the derelict, I think just heightened it, and it was burned into my imagination from the first time I saw it. And I know some people felt like they were betrayed by the design we eventually got for the engineers. And you know what, that makes sense. If you have lived with this concept in your head for decades, there's no way that anything could match your imagination, because you've got, like the, as I was saying in the last episode, like how directors get used to these temp tracks, if you imagine the engineers to be these elephantine looking creatures with trunks, just as their masks have, then seeing these humanoid creatures must be quite a shock and quite disappointing. It's hard to marry those two concepts. That said, I think the engineer design is fantastic. It's so uncanny valley. It's definitely alien. Like, if you see one of those standing next to a human, that is not a human being, but it almost looks like it is. And then it has this white translucent skin and the black eyes. It's so creepy. And it also, again, ties into a lot of conspiracy theories of the Anunnaki, Planet X or Nibiru, the tall white aliens, what are they called? The Nordic aliens. There's a lot of mythology out there, urban mythology, which speaks of creatures not unlike the engineers. Although they tend to be very skinny, the engineers are a bit more jacked. Which again throws it into that creepy, uncanny area, I think. Yeah, like when you look at the body of a bodybuilder, it's this exaggerated, unnatural caricature of the human form. There's something almost attractive about it, but at the same time, it's grotesque. It walks this fine line. All right, that about covers it for now. This is Coulson, signing off.